Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school, you're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Thinking Sideways.
I don't get it.
I brought the aliens.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
I don't know.
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I'm Joe, joined as always by
Devin
and
Steve.
And we're going to talk about another fascinating mystery this week.
Sweet!
Yeah, I know. This is a fun one here. This is a this one has been called, dubbed by some people, the honeymoon killer.
A.K.A. why Devin should never go to Australia for a honeymoon.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Well, don't go to Australia in general. Everything there is trying to kill you, but hey, that's besides the point.
It's a deadly place. Yeah, watch Mad Max if you don't believe me. So this is actually about the death of Tina Watson. There are some who, by the way, feel that the name honeymoon killer is not exactly appropriate, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Tina drowned accidentally while scuba diving in Australia in 2003.
Or did she?
Or did she? I know, because there are people, including Tina's family and the Australian police, who think she was murdered. So we got a mystery here, don't you think?
I think that's usually why we sit down.
Yeah,
that's the only reason I come here.
Yeah.
Mysteries?
All right, so let's talk about the death of Tina Watson. But first off, I want to give a shout out to Maggie, who suggested this episode. So thank you, Maggie.
Oh, yeah, it's a listener suggestion.
Yeah, it's a fun little mystery. And also, I forgot my last episode, I talked about murder on the Herbert Fuller.
Yeah.
Fun little story. And I forgot to mention Rachel, our listener, who suggested that one. So, a belated shout out to you, Rachel. Hi, and hope you're not mad about me forgetting previously. It happens sometimes.
Yep.
Anyway, back to our story. Oh, also a warning, this episode involves water, which may frighten some people, so you've been warned.
My mom is actually scared of oceans.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Huh.
She's very uncomfortable about the ocean.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That is actually a thing.
Does that include, like, walking on the beach or just
being
on boats in the ocean?
Being out on boats in the ocean.
Oh, okay.
When it's so deep and you don't know what's below you.
Yeah. I get seasick, but that's really...
Yeah. Anyway, that's a thing.
I could sort of get that. Yeah. Anyway, back to our story of Tina and her husband, Gabe. That's his name was David Gabriel Watson. I shouldn't say was. As far as I know, he's still alive.
Yeah.
David Gabriel Watson went by the name Gabe, and Christina May Thomas, she went by the name Tina. They were both 26, and they're from Helena, Alabama. If you're from Helena, if that's pronounced Helena, well, I'm sorry. I apologize. But I'll go by Helena. Tina and Gabe met in college, and they'd been together about 2 years before they got married. That was in October 2003, and then they went off for their honeymoon in Australia.
Didn't they have kind of an on-again, off-again relationship during that time?
I have heard that, but I'm not sure.
Okay, that's why I asked, because I had seen it somewhere, and it's like, I don't know who's the source of that.
Well, with these two, you see a lot of stuff about their relationship out there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. And I'm not sure what to believe, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the hardest things about reading this is there's a lot of conjecture about the couple and the relationship and, mm-hmm. and their trip and everything. Like, there's just so much weird coverage.
I know. Yeah. Some people say they were a happy couple. Other people say they were totally dysfunctional. And
tend to do that. We've definitely covered a lot of cases like this where people really read into the relationship and kind of put their own spin on it. And mm-hmm. realistically, nobody can ever know what that relationship was like except for the two people who were in it.
Yeah. It's very true.
Yeah. And I was going to talk a little bit about that. Well, Tina, according to what you hear from some people, including her family and friends, at the age of 26, all of her friends had gotten married, and she was apparently worried that she was going to wind up being an old maid.
Oh.
Yeah, with 26. Cats?
With cats.
We don't know anybody like that.
No, I don't know, but I don't think it's weird to have cats at all, mm-hmm. but some people apparently do. But, and it looks like, from what people have been saying, it looks like Gabe was not exactly Mr. Right for Tina, but at least maybe good enough, I guess. So Tina was desperate. This is, not necessarily true. This is just what some people have been saying.
Yeah, that's right up there with they got married to fix a relationship. It's uh-huh. kind of like sometimes we see in stories, they had children to save their relationship.
Yeah.
Like,
uh-huh. yeah.
It's what you see that out there.
But and then on the other side, Gabe was supposed to be a very controlling, domineering kind of person. He reportedly said to Tina that, well, if you want to be with me, you're going to have to learn to do the things I like to do, which is fishing and scuba diving. And, of course, we've all seen how well the scuba diving turned out for Tina. And, of course, there was a famous engagement ring episode, which I'm sure you guys have heard about, right?
Well, I mean, probably our listeners haven't.
They probably haven't. Let me tell them about that. And, again, this is from, I think, Tina's sister, mostly.
So can I give a little caveat here, which is his family, Gabe's family, apparently liked Tina.
Yeah.
Tina's family despised Gabe prior to everything going down.
At the very least, they didn't
like it.
They weren't.
Okay, despise really, might be a strong word, despised, but they didn't like it.
I'm sure by this point in time they actually do despise him because there's been some bad water under the bridge or something. But the engagement ring episode was supposedly after they'd been together like maybe 6 months or God knows, I can't remember. He bought an engagement ring for her.
Uh-huh.
And brings it home in a little bag, from the jeweler's. It's got the jeweler's name on the side of it. Sets it on top of his big screen TV at home. And then she sees it sitting in the seats of the bag and says, "What's in the bag?" And he says, "Oh, it's an engagement ring, but you can't look at it." And she's like, "What?" And he says, "No, you can't look at it. If you look at it, I'm going to return the ring." And so she didn't look at it. And supposedly this was like tormenting her for months, according to some people. And this is sort of a telling story about...
It's a game to him.
About Gabe, being this sort of manipulative, domineering person.
I don't want to, again, sometimes we put ourselves in the position where we find ourselves defending people who are kind of jerks.
Uh-huh.
But to me, either that is like super domineering or it's his idea of romance.
Yeah, exactly.
Like he's trying to like build suspense.
He's
like,
drawing it out.
Yeah, he's like, well, okay, I'm going to engage. I mean, we're going to get engaged.
She's so crazy for it. She can't help but say yes.
I mean, I think of situations where guys are like, oh yeah, I bought the ring 6 months in, like, because I knew. And then 3 years later, I finally proposed. And I don't know, maybe in his head, it was super romantic to be like, here's this thing that we're going to do. But also, it is super jerk move. I'd be mad.
Well, yeah.
If someone did that to me.
Yeah, but again, you don't know exactly how he said it. He might have just said it kiddingly and all that stuff. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but that's the other thing, too, is he could have totally been, like, joking, like, haha, don't open that, expecting her to open it. And she was like, oh, my God, I better not open it. So she interpreted it one way, and he was hoping she would open it because then he'd be like, so marry me. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think this case is much like, I think it was actually your last one, Joe, the Herbert Fuller,
yeah.
where... the context and the way that the statements were made can dramatically change what their meaning is. And that's, I think we're going to, we're going to have to talk about that several times through this one easily.
Yeah. Totally. And there's been a lot said about this one too. Like one of the things that's been said about Gabe is that he changed his story like 16 times. Yeah, not necessarily so. But anyway, his the picture that's been painted of Gabe in the press, frankly, has not been good.
No.
Not at all. And I have no idea how much, if any, of that stuff is really true. Probably a lot of it's BS. I know a lot of it came from Tina's family, as you said. Things were never great between Gabe and Tina's family.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, after Tina died, well, things really went south.
Yeah.
In a big way.
As you would expect.
Yeah, it's understandable, of course, you know. And Gabe did sort of get her killed by encouraging her to get into scuba.
Uh-huh.
At the very least, yeah, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, and of course, they think it went beyond that. They think he murdered her.
Right.
But we'll talk about that in a few minutes here.
Yeah.
So they've kind of put everything, every aspect of Gabe and his relationship with Tina in the worst possible light, I think. Anyway, back to our honeymoon. We've taken a little detour there, but
that's all good information, though. Pertinent.
Yeah, no, they got married. They went out for their honeymoon in Australia, and of course, somebody didn't make it back, and the other one became known in the press as the honeymoon killer. So that's our mystery this week. They had about 2 weeks in Australia, and the plan was that the first week would be Tina's week, and they would just do stuff that Tina wanted to do.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going to be super judgy and say, like, if you can't compromise as a couple on things you might want to do together.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think that it was all this, you know, screw you, we're doing this, it's my week. I don't think it was quite like that necessarily. It was more like just, what do you...
It was her turn to plan.
Yeah, what do you really want to do in Australia? What's your top priorities?
But that to me is very weird because I know when I went on mine, it was, we have these things in this area while we're there. Which ones do we want to do?
We.
And, yes.
No, I
we
know
being the operative term.
No, I know what happened on yours. Now, on yours, the first week was your wife's week, and then the second week was your wife's week.
I was going to say the first week was alcohol, and the second week was more alcohol.
Well, no, that's true.
Oh, God,
that's
what have I done?
Totally true, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she didn't say that.
Yeah, no, okay. They had a week during Tina's week, and I assume Tina wanted to experience Australian culture, which you know what Australians do.
They drink Fosters.
No, they also put on leather outfits.
Put stuff out on the bobby.
Yeah, they do that. But they also, you know, they wear leather and they drive muscle cars at high speeds in the outback.
They wrestle alligators.
Yeah.
And these are all very true statements.
And they chain people on guitars to the front of cars.
Exactly. Yep. And then they had these high-speed chases and shoot at each other and stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, Australia actually sounds like a pretty badass
place. Pretty fun place.
I know. That's why I want to go.
Yeah.
So to all of our Australian listeners, before you shut this off and unsubscribe... Sorry, we're having fun.
Sorry. Yeah,
we totally are. Then week number two came around. It was Gabe's turn, and Gabe had booked a trip with Mike Ball's Dive Expeditions. And, of course, this was a bad idea. Nobody knew that at the time yet, but it turned out to be a bad idea because based on my anecdotal analysis, statistical probability of somebody dying on your scuba honeymoon in Australia is about 100%.
That's not right.
That's not right?
Nope, because I have friends who did it.
They did it?
And they're both still alive.
They both came back?
Really?
Did anybody on their expedition not come back?
Nope.
Okay, well,
everybody made it.
So 99%.
That is the exception. Actually, all I know is I remember reading in the paper, this was years ago, this couple was honeymooning off the Great Barrier Reef and they were scuba diving and then hubby got eaten by a great white shark, which I'm sure cast a pall over things just a bit. And then, of course, there's this one where Tina died, so there you go.
So 99%.
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
And, of course, there might be other stuff going on out there where people scuba dive and nothing happens, but I don't know about those, so I don't care.
That's not included in your data.
No, exactly.
I only used incidents where people were killed and maimed.
That I have heard of. So, yeah, my data set consists of two. But our story is, they're on a dive trip with Mike Ball Dive Expeditions, and it's going to be a dive on the SS Yongala. Which was a ship that...
It was a shipwreck.
Yeah, it sank in a cyclone in 1911. There's pictures
of it out
there.
Oh, an Expedition 2. Got it.
Yeah, it wasn't sailing on.
I know. Yeah. I was like, wait, I thought this was a scuba diving thing, not a shipwreck thing, but okay.
Yeah, yeah, you can dive in the ship and see all the fish.
Okay,
and...
okay.
Yeah, you can dive on the wreck. But yeah, yeah. The wreck is not sailing anymore, though. It's sort of sitting in one spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Yongala was rediscovered in 1958, and it's considered today to be one of the world's best wreck dives.
Okay.
And I guess, you know, wreck dives are a big thing with scuba divers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very popular.
Oh, yeah, totally. Because, yeah, normally you go down there, what's there to look at? A bunch of fish. So it's kind of cool and dramatic to be able to look at a wrecked ship on
and
the bottom
swim
of the
through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think they encourage people to swim through this one.
Well, I mean, swim through, like, the top deck and the you can go around the cabins. That's what I mean by that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're not really supposed to go inside when you're...
No, not a good idea. No, not really. Not
unless you're very highly rated, which most these people aren't.
Yeah, there's things to cut yourself on, and there's, God knows what's living inside there. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's
something to be thinking about, too.
I saw Finding Nemo. I know what lives in those things.
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of scary stuff hiding in there. But from the outside, at least, it looks pretty cool. Let me give you a quick rundown of how the wreck looks. It's about 50 miles off the east coast of Australia, and it's southeast of a town called Townsville.
And how far is that in miles to kilometers?
So that would be 80 kilometers.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's about 28 meters down, or about 100 feet.
Okay.
So the seafloor is, it's laying on its starboard side.
So it's not super deep, but
enough. Not really, no. And especially, you don't have to go all the way down. You can cruise like 50 feet down and see the wreck nice and just look at it from up.
Right. My point was, it's not like it requires some crazy dive setup. Like, remember we talked about Ben McDaniels and the gas mixes that he need. It's nothing like that.
No, not at all. And it is considered a sort of difficult dive because of currents and such things.
Mm-hmm.
But the wreck is oriented north to south, so the bow is pointing north, maybe a little bit off north, but more or less north south. And they've set it up for essentially permanent access points or permanent anchor points, because so many boats are coming and going and bringing dive groups there. You can't have people setting anchors all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've done is
tear things up.
Oh, yeah. So they've dropped these massive concrete blocks with chains or ropes attached to them that go up to buoys. So you cruise up in your boat full of divers, and you just grab one of those buoys and tie your anchor line to that instead of dropping an anchor. And there's two special blocks that are called diver access points, or DAPs. And there's one at the bow, one at the stern, also a chain or a rope. I've heard it said... I'm not sure which it is. I've seen a picture of it. It looks like a rope, but other people have said it's a chain.
Okay.
Well, doesn't matter. It's a line that goes down to about 10 meters in front of the ship from a buoy at top.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's where you get in, and then you cruise down. The current is flowing from north to south along the wreck. And so what most divers do is they get in at what's called DAP 2, diver access point 2 at the bow, go down as deep as they feel like going, and then just let go and let the current take them across just down the length of the wreck.
So you can just basically drift over the top of it and check it out, and then get to the exit.
And get to the exit line, DAP 1, and just climb back out again. Of course, you can do whatever you want. You can stop off and explore and, you know, prowl around on the side of the wreck, or you can just, like I say, drift right over the top of it.
Just like a lazy river.
Yeah, pretty much like a little river cruise,
just
you know?
Sit, yep.
Yeah, and so it looks
at
like...
At the water park?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so on the morning, I believe it was October 22nd, 2003, they had gotten on their boat, which was called the Spoilsport.
That was the dive boat they were on.
The dive boat that they were on. They'd gotten on that the night before, and then they spent the night on the boat, and then the next morning, I think they... Or actually, I think that night they cruised out and just sort of spent the night cruising out there, and they woke up in the morning, and they were pretty much there. The Spoilsport tied off at what's called access or point 905, which is an anchor point directly to the east of the wreck.
Okay.
And then a little later in the morning, another boat showed up, the Jazz 2, which is another dive company, and they tied up at point 904, which is a point north of where the Spoilsport was and kind of northeast of the wreck. So the Jazz 2 was actually pretty close to the bow of the ship. And then later on, yet another boat showed up on the other side at point 903, and they tied up. That's the Adrenaline tied up there. So there were three boats in the water there, and a lot of divers.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is...
So they're making kind of a loose triangle on top of the wreck at this point.
Yeah, kind of around the outside of the wreck.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, a very popular place, just all teeming with divers all the time. Yeah. Well, on the day of, they went to get in the water. So the Spoilsport was, of course, south of the access point. So what would happen is that people would suit up and they would get into a rubber
dinghy,
know,
or something.
Dinghy kind of thing. Well, a little bigger than a dinghy, but essentially a boat.
Yeah.
And it would be ferried up to the put-in point, diver access point 2. Mm-hmm. And then they would all go down and do their thing. And then they could, when they got to the exit point, they could either be picked up by a boat, or I think they had a rope. Actually, when they tied it, they tied a rope across from the spoils port to the exit line.
Mm.
And they also put a cylinder of air down there, too, at 5 meters down for people who were running low on air but needed to do a little decompressing. So they had an extra cylinder of air hanging down there for safety.
Mm-hmm. I think that's standard, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I remember from the Ben McDaniel thing. It was
decompression?
Standard.
Yeah.
No, that like you would have extra tanks.
Yeah, especially on a set up organization like this. Absolutely. Because while 100 feet isn't going to give you the worst decompressions, the bends, there is a chance of some of it. So it is good practice.
And you would want to have tanks there so that.
Yeah, in case. Yeah. You know, the guy needs to sit there for 5 minutes and he's only got 3 minutes of air.
Exactly.
You want to encourage him to do the right thing by having the air available instead of just saying, screw it, I've only got 3 minutes, I'm just going to get out.
Yeah.
And then barfing all over your boat.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's worse than barfing.
Yeah, lots of times.
The bends are bad. My understanding of how that works, I'm sure I'll get an email about this, but a lot of it has to do with depth and also how long you've been down.
Yes.
So
yeah, it's how long you've been down and then how long you spent taking, is it the nitrogen in your blood? Is that what it is, I think?
I think it is. You get little bubbles in your blood and stuff. And so there was some controversy about this, even in that one. Some people feel like Gabe took too long to come up to surface. But we'll talk about that soon, though. So they were heading out about maybe 10 to get into the water. And they were one of a group of 6 divers. And they headed out to the access point and climbed on in with the other divers. And
How long had Tina and Gabe been
I probably should have mentioned that. Yeah, they were, Gabe had been doing it since...
Dramatically different amounts of time.
Sure, but I'm just wondering for...
Gabe had been doing it since, I believe, 1996, and he had a total number... He had a total number of dives, like 56 dives.
Okay.
And then Tina had, I think, 11 dives under her belt.
Okay. And so she was an amateur.
She was a novice. And
she was not good at it.
Right.
And actually, Gabe was a novice, too. I mean, he had a lot of his dives were just like kind of pool dives. He actually took his first classes in a quarry, basically a flooded quarry.
Mm-hmm. Which means there's no current whatsoever.
Yeah, very controlled environment. He did a little bit of ocean diving, not too much. And most of his dives were pretty shallow. We're talking like 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the deepest he ever went was about 130 feet. Something like that.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
When you do the reading on this, what's so confusing, this is what really lights some people on fire. People will list his certifications other than the quote unquote rescue dive certification. Mm-hmm. All he had was basic novice certifications.
Yeah.
He could dive. He was okay to dive on his own in a group. He wasn't some crazy super expert dive master in any way, shape, or form.
No,
and I will
at all.
Just mention that just because you're certified rescue something
doesn't mean anything.
Really mean it means you technically have the knowledge in your brain on how to do a given thing. But until you're put in that situation, you have no idea if you're going to be able to do it or not.
Well, exactly. He took this class, and he even said himself in his police interview that the class really more covered things like just search patterns and stuff like that, like how to find somebody versus how to actually do the hairy work of rescuing them.
Right.
And so, you know, he wasn't as qualified as he sort of made himself out to be. And I'm not sure, too. I mean, again, I don't want to accuse him of misrepresenting himself. Maybe he didn't. He might have just said, hey, you know, I did take this rescue class, and people might have heard, oh, he's a certified rescue diver. Maybe Gabe never misrepresented himself at all.
Yeah.
People have said that he did. I'm not so sure that he did.
Yeah, I feel like he's a bit of a blowhard. But I was going to say is that the other half of your question was Tina.
Mm-hmm.
She had only been diving in pools, if I remember correct, or maybe one quarry
and
dive
really
or something.
And really only for like a year.
Yeah, and she'd been in classes and apparently was not good at it and was kind of panicky underwater.
She did not take to it like a duck to water, not at all.
No.
Yeah, she...
Or fish instance.
Yeah, she did not seem to... But she really seemed determined to learn because, you know, Gabe was her man and she wanted to do the scuba thing so she could be doing things with him, you know?
Okay, so, I just realized we hadn't talked about that yet. So.
Yeah, no, what they did is not uncommon. I mean, like I said, I had friends who... He was a diver forever. he wanted to go to this tropical place and dive on their honeymoon. And she said, yeah, let's do that. Let me go get this. And she took like 6 months or a year of lessons in preparation before they ever went out. Like, mm-hmm. people do this. There's nothing bad or nefarious to say, hey, let's take a dive trip on our honeymoon.
No.
Some people are take to it better than others.
Yeah, I thought myself, you know, I've always thought if I lived in a nicer climate with clearer, warmer oceans, I would totally be a scuba diver. Mm-hmm. But we live in Oregon, and let's face it. I mean, I know some scuba divers, and they jet halfway around the world. They go to the Caribbean. They go to the South Pacific. You know, you can't do it without a lot of money. But there's not that many places to really do good scuba around here. So I'm not a scuba diver, you know. Otherwise, I would, because it's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to do it, you know. But
so they go out with...
Oh, yeah. So back to our story here. So they go out with four other divers, and they get in the water and go down just a little ways. And then it turns out that Gabe's dive computer is not working right. And
what's a dive computer?
Yeah, a dive computer is like this little apparatus.
It's basically a smartwatch for underwater.
Yeah, it's like a gigantic watch underwater, and it does stuff like it keeps track of your depth and stuff. And some of them, I've been told, I talked to a dive expert about this stuff. His name is Austin at Aquatic Sports here in Portland. And he was very, very helpful in explaining how some of this stuff works to me. So dive computers can be, there's several different types. Like the cheapest, simplest kind is basically uses computer algorithms to just sort of estimate, you know, if you put your parameters in, it just sort of says, hey, you told me you had this much oxygen, you've been down for this long. You might be running out, dude. You know, that kind of thing. Real simple stuff. And then the more fancier ones, like the one Gabe has, actually has a little radio transmitter that you put in your tank. And it actually, it's got a sensor that can sense the pressure in your tank and tell you how much air you've got left, which is kind of cool, kind of important. And so this one had issues. In his first statement to the police, he said that they got in the water and he noticed it wasn't working. In his second statement, it was later on, I think it was on the same day, but just later in the day with a different interrogator, he said that, well, they got in the water and his computer was beeping at him and saying that there was a malfunction and saying he had no air pressure. And so he was, so they got back out of the water, they get back in the boat, they go back to the spoil sport.
He and Tina both.
Yeah, he and Tina both.
Okay. They're dive buddies, they go together.
Well, they got to go together.
Just want to clarify, mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because and this is one of the things I asked Austin. I said, well, you know, is it really that important? And he said, well, you know, it kind of is, because I guess with divers, you want to keep track of all your stats. It's like a baseball player, you know. Mm. And so that's one reason, they want to keep track of all their dives, and your dive computer does that for you. It actually has memory, and it keeps track of your dives, how deep you went, what your oxygen consumption was like, and how fast you went down and came back up, and all kinds of stuff like that. And so they like to keep track. So he said, you know, I would probably fix it rather than, you know, just go without.
Mm-hmm.
You could do the dive without it, but your typical diver is going to, because something, a little bit has been made about this, about the whole, he had to go back just because his dive computer wasn't working. What's the big deal, dude? You know, and
an important piece of equipment.
Well, it's
kind of a safety equipment.
Yeah, well, it's been thought that perhaps there were too many divers around and he wanted an excuse to delay and come back out a little later when there weren't as many divers.
Oh, it was a ruse. Got it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was Dateline NBC actually mentioned this point, but they weren't the first or the last to say that. Well, because he went back to the spoil sport, opened it up, took out the battery, realized it was in backwards, flipped it around, and put it in the right way, and the dive computer worked. So
if his dive computer is beeping at him and he had the battery in backwards, it wouldn't have worked. So it had mm-hmm. to have been the battery on his tank.
Mm-hmm.
The sensor on his tank had to have been the one that was in backwards.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't actually beeping at him.
Well,
okay,
yeah, or,
I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, see, that is the point that people have made, is they said, like, well, okay, if the battery was in backwards, then it couldn't have been beeping at him because it wouldn't work at all. It's not even going to produce a beep.
But if the tank receiver is not sending any information, the dive computer theoretically would be like, hey, you have no air. You have no air because it's getting no signal.
That was essentially it. And apparently with this particular one, it's called an Oceanic. And Oceanic makes a lot of different models. I can't remember what model this exactly was, but yeah, it was the transmitter battery that was in. And apparently, you know how their coin cells.
They're watch batteries, basically.
Little bitty, like, watch batteries, right? You know how they've got the smooth side that's got the little plus sign in it and everything? Mm-hmm. And usually that side is the upside. Well, in this one, the unit that goes in the one on your wrist is like that, but the one that goes in the transmitter in the tank is the other way around. And
so the screw side is down.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what happened is you put it in backwards. Apparently, they recommend taking the batteries out if you're not going to use it for a week or more, which is not a bad idea with electronic devices.
Yeah.
Take the batteries out.
Seriously.
So he'd put the batteries in just prior to his trip, I think, and got one of them in backwards. So, yeah, he flipped it around and it worked. So, again, it wasn't that his computer was working. It's just the transmitter, as you say, in his tank was not working.
Right.
And transmitting a signal.
And I also, just as a note, don't find anything particularly nefarious from him first saying it wasn't working and second saying it was beeping, because he's saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? He just has added a detail.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, exactly.
As it's calmed, I mean, as he's gotten further away.
Well, I mean, they both.
From what happened.
Yeah, I mean, they both essentially saying the same thing. One is saying it's not working right, you know, beeping or not.
Right.
You know, and the second it wasn't working right.
It was beeping.
Yeah. With a little more information. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, Joe said this earlier, is that there's his story changed 16 times. This is an example of the quote unquote changes. They're very simple little things.
Well,
right.
And as we've talked about before, you know, witness statements change and evolve, and you know, that's just what happens.
Exactly. And the thing about it is, too, is he made certain statements to the police, and they were more or less the same. Although I have to admit, some of them don't entirely make sense, but okay. But then he said other things to other people. There were a lot of other people there that were fellow divers on the boat. And company, you know, company employees and stuff. And he said various things to various people, and also members of Tina's family, et cetera, Tina's dad and his sister. And then it was not actually until several years after this whole incident that there began to be a big, huge police investigation. A lot of these people were not interviewed until several years after the fact.
Mm.
And these were people who had talked to Gabe, but after several years, I mean, they're all going to have different memories.
Yeah.
And so that the whole he changed his story 16 times really kind of came from that. All these different people said that Gabe said different things.
Mm.
But I mean,
but they said he said.
They said he said this
and
several
years later.
And years later. And
right.
So, well, what do you expect?
Yeah.
I mean,
I also will just briefly mention, sorry, before we like get back into the story here. I also feel like it's like either way, right? Police are often suspicious when they're like, the story didn't change at all.
That's even more suspicious.
You know, and then they're like, but the story changed. It's just like, no, nobody's ever going to be happy with
it. I know,
I know. The moral of the story is police are always suspicious.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which I guess
they kind of are.
Kind of supposed to be, though.
That's kind of the nature of their job, unfortunately.
All right, so the battery, he fixed it, and then what, they go back out?
Yeah, yeah. So they go back out. And by the way, apparently Tina was complaining that she felt too buoyant, and so she did ask an employee on the boat where the weights were, because she's wearing what's called a BCD, it's a buoyancy compensation device,
which is an inflatable bag.
Essentially, it's a vest, and it's part of your gear. It's like that your tank attaches to it and everything, and it fastens around your body, and it's got bladders inside, so you can inflate it and change your buoyancy, and it hooks up to your air tank and bleeds out that, and so you can inflate it or deflate it as needed to change your buoyancy. But she felt, and they also have pockets, so you can add weight.
Mm.
And so she felt like she was underweighted, so she said that she asked, hey, where are the weights? And she was pointed towards the weights, but nobody actually recalls seeing her grabbing weights and putting them in her pockets or what. It turns out in the end she wound up with about 20 pounds of weight in her pockets, which some people feel was too much. That's about four different chunks of metal she had in her pockets.
Well,
and I don't know. Because I don't, you know, again, it's going to vary. It depends on your gear. It depends on
you.
Tina. Well, Tina weighed, I think she weighed about 140 pounds. I have no idea what her body composition was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she was solid muscle or mostly fat, you know, 40% fat. I have no idea. So there's a lot of variables there.
I also, you know, you're not going to say, yeah, the weights are over there and I'm going to watch you put them in your vest. You're going to say, this is a responsible adult who's making their own decisions. They probably signed the waiver.
The dive company had apparently already talked to them and been convinced that they were competent divers.
Yeah.
Although they knew that she was a bit of a novice. One thing they were supposed to do a test dive with her.
They're supposed to do an orientation dive.
And that never happened.
Well, yeah.
So that, you know, I'm sure that the guy on the boat who is helping out is presumes these things have already been taken care of.
Yeah.
So it's not his job to watch her like she's a 2-year-old child.
Well, right. Actually, you can't be just badgering people left and right saying, oh, by the way, are you
qualified?
Hey, is that
too much weight? Are you sure you can handle that weight?
Are you qualified? Are you incompetent? Are you a moron? Yeah, you can't really be saying that to people, you know, but...
So she puts weight in her vest.
She puts weight in her vest.
While Gabe is fixing his battery.
While Gabe is doing his thing, okay. Yeah. And she might have overweighted herself. Hard to say.
Possible.
It seems, in light of everything that happened afterwards, she might have. And that's one thing I should say about the company, too. They did kind of, like, drop the ball on this a little bit.
A little fast and loose.
Yeah, they probably should have. I mean, I think that really this whole situation would have turned out just fine but these two, but really Gabe and Tina they were both basically novices.
Yeah.
You know, both of them were. And they should not have been dive buddies on that particular
thing.
They
should have had more experienced dive buddies.
Yeah, they should have been paired off with experienced dive buddies. Mm-hmm. They really should have. I'm sure from their point of view, hey, it's our honeymoon.
We want to be together.
We want to be together to drift past this wreck. It's going to be so magical, you know, and all this stuff.
Romantic.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll put an engagement ring on it.
Oh, that's a good point. Oh,
it's
too late for that.
It.
Yeah. So back on the boat. They get back on the little boat, that is. And then
The dinghy.
And it's just the two of them.
No, actually, they were, I think, 4 divers this time.
Again?
Yeah. No, okay. I think there were fewer divers. I think there were, like, the two of them and the two others. One of whom was Wade Singleton, who was, like, the dive director on this trip. So he was, like, the most senior diver on the ship. And he is actually the guy who wound up, like, fishing Tina
doing
up off the ocean
Doing the
floor.
Rescue, yes.
He rescued her, yeah. But, so he was there, and they headed back down, and... things seemed to go okay, at least for a little bit. They went down about, and I think they wound up at about a depth of around 45 feet. They went down slowly, but they were in the water probably at a maximum of 10 minutes. And it was actually not too long after they got in the water and got down to about 45 feet. And apparently they were drifting downstream
because there is a current going from, it's moving from the north.
Yeah, from north to south.
Oh, sorry, yeah. South,
from the bow towards the stern. They were moving with the current, and Gabe said later that he felt the current was way too strong. He thought it was really super strong, much stronger than he had been expecting.
Mm.
And that apparently was a little bit scary for both him and for Tina. And they were, of course, being pushed away from the entry line, the DAP 2, the bow line. And they were getting down about probably maybe 25, 30 yards. So essentially, visibility was about 15 or 20 yards underwater at that point.
So they couldn't see their starting point anymore.
They had kind of lost sight of it. I mean, they kind of knew where it was because the ship was underneath them. But at this point in time, they drifted over the ship. And apparently, Gabe said that Tina seemed to be anxious, and she signaled she wanted to go back to the line and get out. Apparently, she was having, and I could sort of see it because, I mean, I haven't scuba'd, but I've done a lot of snorkeling in the ocean, not in Hawaii, by the way, but I have snorkeled, and it's a really alien environment. It is, if you're not used to it, it's kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially when you're drifting over this huge hulk of a ship, there's something about huge objects underwater that's kind of intimidating.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
I do.
And that I can't explain it, but you know, that's just what it is. And so it might have been that. I'm not sure exactly, or it might have been the current.
She could have just been like nervous and uncomfortable. I mean, if this was her first time really in the ocean scuba-ing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gabe, at one point, I heard a statement somewhere that he suggested that instead of trying to get back up to the entry line, they just go straight up. And apparently, but she wanted to get back to the line.
It's the only point she had in her brain, apparently, of where to go.
Yeah. And I think it's quite, I think she probably was nervous because her dive computer, one of the things the police did is they seized the dive computers from Gabe and Tina. They took them into custody because you can download all the information on those things.
Mm-hmm.
And also they grabbed Wade Singleton's computer too and downloaded his information. And apparently her dive computer did record a much higher than normal use of air. So that's what happens when you're scuba diving and you're
breathing
nervous.
Like hyperventilating.
Yeah, yeah, you're breathing way too fast. So apparently she was pretty scared and nervous.
Mm-hmm. And sorry, was Wade did he have visibility towards the couple or?
I don't think he was within sight of them at this point in time. But he was somewhere not too far away because again he did sort of like, you know, was Johnny on the spot when she finally went down. But I'm getting ahead of myself there, though. But they were, I think, at this point, kind of like not really visible to anybody because it was, again, limited visibility in the water there. And according to Gabe, he took her hand and they started swimming together back up against the current towards the line. He said it was tough going because of the current. And then they paused at one point and she apparently was getting negatively buoyant. And so he pointed towards the button on the BCD, the buoyancy compensation device, and you hit that button and it will push air into that and make you more positively buoyant. So he indicated that to her, and he said it looked to him like she was actually hitting the button, but nothing was happening. It wasn't changing her status at all. So at that point, well, it was time to continue on. He grabbed her, I think, by the shoulder of her harness this time and started heading back towards the line again.
Well, the thing about the BCD, though, is it's not like the emergency raft on a boat that just goes and it's completely full.
Yeah, no, it's for making,
like,
it's for making small adjustments, so you don't want it blasting huge quantities of air in there,
right? So she's like pushing it, you know, tap, 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 thinking, why is this thing not inflated? That would explain why they're not getting the reaction that they expect.
That could have been it, but anyway, he headed on back to the line some more, and he said at this point in time, she was getting heavier, it seemed like. She was, like, no longer swimming, and she was just sort of hanging vertically underneath him as opposed to horizontally swimming next
to him. She'd stopped swimming.
It looked like, yeah. At that point, at least he stopped. He still had hold of her, and apparently she panicked and thrashed around and knocked his respirator out of his mouth and knocked his mask off, askew on his face. And
which fills it with water.
And it was so his mask fills with water. He lets go of her and it pulls his mask back into place. And then he has to like blow some air out through his nose to clear the mask. And then he's got to find his respirator and it's like floating out somewhere he can't see out of his vision. But they've got a backup that's also on the BCD. So he grabs that and sticks that in his mouth. And then he looks, and while Tina has floated downward,
she's sinking.
She's now sinking downward slowly. He said that she was sinking, looking up at him with her arms outstretched towards him.
But not really doing anything?
But not really kicking or screaming or fighting or doing anything like you would expect somebody to do in a situation like that. And he said at this point that what he did is he upended himself. And of course, I didn't mention that, though, I don't think he had been actually hitting his BCD and inflating it.
To try and compensate for the drag.
For the drag. And so he upends himself and tries to swim down after her. And he said he couldn't make it to her.
Because he was full of air.
He was too buoyant.
Possibly. I'm not totally sure about how much that's true or not. That's one of the parts of the story that really doesn't make sense. This is one of the things I ran past Austin at Aquatic Sports. I said, does that make any sense to you at all, even if his BCD was totally inflated, that he couldn't get down to her, couldn't catch up with her? And he said, no, it makes absolutely no sense at all. Even with an overinflated BCD, that's really weird that he wouldn't be able to give a few kicks of his fins and get down to her. But according to him, he couldn't get to her.
Okay.
And so he had to make a decision. He thought, well, okay, I can keep going after her. She's going to hit bottom here eventually, and then I can catch up with her. But what happens if I hit bottom, and for whatever reason, I can't raise her up off the bottom and get her to the surface? What happens then? Well, then I've got to take that much longer to get up 100 feet versus 50 feet where I'm at about now. I think the greatest depth on his computer was at 54, 55 feet.
Something like that.
Yeah. And so his thinking was, what he told the police later was, well, okay, if I follow her all the way down and can't get her up, it's going to take me that much longer to get up to the surface.
To get help.
And so maybe it's better if I turn and go for help now. And so that's what he said he did, is he turned and he headed, like, not just up, but also towards the diver access point at the bow, where he said there were a couple of divers hanging on to it at that, and he went up and tapped them and grabbed them and shook them and said and tried to gesture and make it clear that there was trouble and all that stuff, and they just sort of looked at him like, what?
Because they're tourists.
Yeah, he said that at least one of them was an Asian guy. And so
maybe he didn't speak English.
Well, and yeah.
No, I think they're novices. They don't understand the hand signs because he's underwater at this point still, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's, he was just trying to... he was just trying to say, like, you know, he had no idea exactly who these divers were. Mm-hmm. And so the only identifying characteristics you could see is he could see a couple of Asian eyes looking at him through the... That's out of the mask, and so that's about it as far as describing these people.
Okay.
And, of course, later on, they identified a few Koreans that were on the Jazz, too, who neither one of them actually remembered this incident, which was kind of didn't look so good for Gabe when it turns out. Yeah, it doesn't look that good. So he gives up on trying to get them to help, so he goes, he continues on upwards, and when he gets there, he yells at the boat and says his wife has, like, gone down, and she's in trouble, and the alarm goes up, and guy gets on his radio. People on the boat start suiting up and getting ready to go down for a search and rescue. But as it happens, Wade Singleton comes along and notices somebody laying on the ocean floor next to the ship
and thinks that's wrong.
And thinks, yeah, exactly. Something's a little hinky there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something about her body language and the fact that she's not moving. So he goes over there and shakes her a little bit, and nothing's going on. So he grabs her and hits her BCD button to inflate it as much as he can, and they head on up. They took about, I think, a minute and a half to ascend to the 100 feet, which my understanding is that's a kind of a breakneck pace to go up from 100 feet.
Yeah.
For in scuba terms.
Well, yeah, but yeah. It makes sense.
It was an
emergency circumstance. But for Wade, you know, obviously for Tina at this point, she was dead. Not to give away the game, but oh well, I already have. So, but for him, it was a risk. It was a big risk. But he got her up there, and they spent about 40 minutes, I think, trying to resuscitate her. The nearest boat was the Jazz 2. So they took her over to the Jazz 2, and turns out there were a couple of doctors that happened to be just diving on the boat, and they got them over there to help out with some of this. And after everything they did, they gave up after about 40 minutes.
But Gabe wasn't on that boat. He ended up on a different boat.
He ended up back on the Spoil Sport. Yeah, he was back on the Spoil Sport, standing in the stern of it. And a lot has been made of that, is that, you know, he was on the Spoil Sport. His wife is on the Jazz, and they're trying to resuscitate her. And what's he doing hanging out on the Spoil Sport when she's over there and, you know, dying, apparently? And so, well, you know, that is a question, I guess.
Yeah, but he didn't know exactly where she was.
He might not have known. Yeah.
And it's not as if they're going to say, quick, send the dinghy over, bring the distraught husband over so he can get in the way while we try to resuscitate this woman.
Well, you know, I don't know that would be high on their list of things to do.
I'm afraid not.
I also think if you have somebody who's distraught, you're not necessarily going to say, let's move this person. You're going to say, let's try to keep this person here and calm, because if you try to move this person, you risk having more than one victim.
That's always possible.
Because, you know, if he jumps in and, like, tries to swim there, but he's panicking or whatever, I mean, you have to minimize the victims.
Yeah, and so that's what was going on. It didn't look so good from some people's points of view, I suppose. And there were a lot of different statements that were made, some of which are rather apocryphal. You know, there were many things, many weird things. A lot of his story didn't make sense. And then there was, one of the local Australian police overheard him there was a body viewing at the coroner's. You know, they had to identify the body, and they left him with her body for a little while. And a policeman overheard him mumbling to her, I'm so sorry, and I never meant to hurt you, and I shouldn't have kept taking you down, and I'm sorry, I couldn't stop it. That's what the police said, Gabe said, to Tina's body.
All those statements go both ways.
Let's talk about that in theories, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And so that's where we're at. It was originally classified as an unfortunate accident. There was, of course, an investigation anyway, but it was still classified as an accident. But then one of the divers, actually, that was on the boat, remembered feeling a little at the time, feeling a little bit uneasy about the situation, and thinking that after talking directly to Gabe and hearing his story, feeling like, well, it just didn't make any sense. And when he got back to the States, he looked up Tina's father, Tommy Thomas, and they arranged a little meeting, and this guy tells Tommy all the doubts that he had in his mind about this whole thing. And of course, the Thomas family, They've been kind of wondering about this whole situation for a long time now. This sort of gelled things for them, and they started this campaign to get the Australians to reopen the investigation. Eventually, so compressing a lot of stuff into a small amount of time. They re-interviewed a lot of people. They had an inquest and everything, and they decided to indict Gabe for murder, because the theory being that he had... Oh, and I forgot about, there was another doctor, Dr. Stutz, who also, of course, this was sometime after the fact when he was interviewed. He testified that he spotted Gabe and Tina underwater, because he followed them into the water later. He saw them, and Gabe was holding Tina in a bear hug.
Oh, yeah, underwater. I forgot about the bear hug thing.
The bear hug. And so the police's theory is that he grabbed her, cranked off her air supply, and basically held her in that bear hug so that she couldn't get to the surface or do anything. And then once she had died and drowned and everything, he turned her air supply back on so everything would look okay and let her just drop, and concocted this whole ludicrous story about how it was all a horrible accident when he had actually murdered her. And by the way, it turns out there was some life insurance money involved. A decently large amount. According to Tina's dad, she said that not long before the wedding, she had told him that that Gabe wanted to her to increase the amount of her life insurance and also make him the beneficiary of it.
Well, they were about to be married, so the beneficiary thing makes sense.
It kind of does, yeah.
And I don't know, maybe the increases make sense too.
Yeah, it might.
There's a whole bunch of reasons to change it. I mean, I don't know what his reasonings were, but again, this is one of those things. Can be very innocent or very, very...
It can look kind of bad. I think the way it was set up is where she was working it. And I used to have a job that was like this. You could get the minimum, basically, employer paid. You get the minimum life insurance. And that's what she was doing. And he just said, well, you know, it doesn't cost that much in premiums. You know, you should bump that up. You know, you really should. It doesn't cost all that much. And you get a lot huger benefit out of the whole thing. And so I don't know that he actually pressured her, if he just sort of said it offhand one day. You know, you ought to increase that. It wouldn't cost you that much. And so I don't know exactly how that, again, that we have Tina's father for this. Now, Tina never, as far as I know, she never told anybody else about this. So we only have his word for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that the life insurance did actually play a role in the prosecution.
In Australia?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, this is the Australian prosecution, which is now charging him with murder.
So are
with
we in murder. Theories or?
Not quite.
No, this is still,
quite.
We haven't even got to theories. This is what happens.
Yeah, this is what got happened. It. And I'm compressing it as much as I can. I mean, this story is pretty huge, actually. It was a huge sensation, especially in Australia. But even it generated some news up here, too. In the States, but turns out the policy was worth about $33,000.
Not a lot.
That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Annual salary.
Yeah, essentially. Gabe was not the beneficiary of it. It's hard to say if that was a sufficient motive or not. Sounds like not to me. But that did play a part in the prosecution's reasoning. That was the motive for doing it.
Oh, that he was mad that he wasn't the beneficiary?
No, that maybe he was mistakenly believed that she had jacked up the amount and had made him the beneficiary, but he was too careless apparently to check before they left for the
honeymoon. That would be a jacked up amount for me. Like, I 33? Have the similar situation as you were talking about, that my employer pays a certain amount, and it's not 33 a year, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a definite amount that I will murder somebody for. 33.
It's not 33.
No, nah, not 33. No, sorry.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, no. And by the way, you guys, I've been meaning to talk to you about life insurance.
So he is convicted in Australia?
They knocked it down. He essentially negotiated a plea for manslaughter. So he returned voluntarily to Australia to stand trial for the charges and basically agreed to plead guilty to manslaughter and was sentenced to like a year in prison. And then it was lengthened to about a year and a half because the family was upset and the Thomases were upset.
So he spent a year and a half.
So he spent, a certain amount of time in Australian prison and eventually was... After he got out, he was deported and sent back to the States. And the Australians had, meanwhile, a lot of the investigation actually had been, what's the word I'm thinking of here, at the aegis of Alabama police. Essentially, somebody
done at the behest of?
Yeah, at the behest of the, Tommy Thomas got in touch with the local police in Alabama and spelled the whole thing out to them. And so they had actually gone, the Alabama police had lit a fire into the Australians a little bit, ginned up interest over there, gotten their conviction. Now he's back. They want to try him for murder here in the States, which in their theory was, well, this looks like a coldly calculated, well-planned out murder. So he must have planned this back here in Alabama. Therefore, we can prosecute him for murder, even though it took place halfway around the world. So they were planned. They were going to take him to trial and try to convict him of murder. And apparently the judge threw it all out.
Yeah, they had no case.
Yeah, essentially the judge said, what are you doing here? You got no case. Okay, so that's where it is. Gabe has since remarried. His new wife is not dead.
She does look a lot like Tina.
Well, that's not surprising. We all have a type, right?
Yeah,
it's not.
I know.
Yeah,
I threw that out there just because I see it everywhere, and people just get excited over that.
Imagine that first date, though. And it's like, oh, you ever been married? Oh, yeah, she died. What happened? Oh, she died on our honeymoon. Everybody thinks I killed her. I didn't, I swear. They call me the honeymoon killer, just so you know. But apparently they made it past that little hump and wound up getting married.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like I said, still alive. That's about it. There's a lot more out there. If you want to do more research on our little mystery, there's tons of stuff out there. It's time for us to get into theories. But before we do that, let us take a really brief break. Take a look at me now.
The roof is leaking.
I'm just standing here.
Oh, think twice.
You know what I mean.
Another day in paradise.
If leaving me is easy.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight.
This must be love.
I missed again.
Tomorrow never knows.
Do you know what any of that means? Yeah, me neither. You should probably pick up a copy of Not Dead Yet by Phil Collins so he can explain it. Or, better yet, why don't you get it from Audible and let him read the book himself? I mean, who doesn't love to just sit around and listen to that guy all day? Yeah, well, there is the past Mrs. Collins, but that's just not fair. So go to Audible. Audible just launched the first ever binge listening event, and you are invited to binge on great listens and big savings with their biggest sale ever. Enjoy the benefits of Gold Audible membership, celebrity narrated Audible books, new podcasts and audio shows, exclusive content, and more. A $50 savings since Audible's annual membership retails for $149.95.
The sale ends June
28, 2017. Learn more at audible.com/binge.
Okay, we're back. Time to talk about theories. There are essentially three theories here. One is, murder. That's the prosecution's theory. He killed her. And it's not surprising to me that some people were a little suspicious because a lot of parts of Gabe's story really didn't actually make a lot of sense. Like the part about not being able to catch up with her when she was sinking underwater.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that didn't make a huge amount of sense to me. Of course, as you know, it's awfully suspicious about the insurance policy thing and wanting her to bump up the amount and all that stuff.
Of course, we know that really amounts to nothing.
Mm-hmm. And there's also that talk about Gabe's controlling personality. And so maybe after a week in Australia, maybe something or another caused Gabe to sort of think that, well, Tina is just a little wild stallion that'll never be tamed, and so I've got to kill her, right? Right, yeah. Or maybe she flirted with some handsome Australian dude, and then he went nuts with jealousy and decided to kill her.
Yeah, she met Paul Hogan.
Yeah. You know, and I got to say about this part is if he was the total controlling sort of person, you know, manipulative, controlling, whatever, and he found somebody that was willing to put up with that, I wouldn't have thought he would have killed her.
I'd agree.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's like that's a find.
Yeah.
Another thing is the battery malfunction in his dive computer. Again,
Which we talked about. Yeah.
The fact that he reversed the battery, but it was beeping before, and now it's working. Well, apparently the prosecution didn't actually trouble themselves
to try to
figure out exactly how the thing worked. Actually, there's another website that's out there that's got a fantastic amount of information about this case. It's actually written by a professional diver, and he explains all the whole battery thing. But apparently the prosecution made much of this. They really said that was part of their theory, is that he wanted to murder her, he planned it out, and he faked a malfunction in his dive computer so that he could get her by herself and not go down with all those other divers.
Well, then there's they also figured he was doing something weird or murder, was guilty. Proof of his guilt was shown in the fact that he always got so upset about all the stuff on her gravesite, all the flowers, and he kept hauling them away.
Yeah, her family would leave flowers there, and he would and they kept disappearing.
And then somehow they chained him or tied him down.
They started wiring him down, cabling him down, and stuff. And then they would still disappear. And they finally put a closed circuit, like a camera, out there. And it turns out Gabe was busted. He was the one removing the flowers.
I don't think there's anything to that, though, because he may have thought that it was highly disrespectful. Because this is something I have friends that refer to, the, you know, like where there's an accident and people leave memorials and balloons and all of that. And then nobody takes that down. And 3 or 4 weeks later, it's
like
all
crap.
Wilted. It's,
yeah.
Well, they call them, my friends refer to those as trash trees.
Yeah.
And so he may have said, "You jerks, why are you turning my dead wife's grave into a trash tree
and removing it?
That's the thing I don't know. It's like some of the stuff they left was plastic artificial flowers, which he thought were tacky and ugly. As far as the other flowers, I don't know if he was removing fresh roses or if they were like a week old, kind of dead looking. I don't know. Yeah, I really don't. But apparently, a lot was made of that. And I don't know what to make of it myself, personally. But there's also the fact that maybe he just did it out of pure spite. And let's face it, we can be a perfectly decent person and not murderers and still be kind of petty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That happens. It does happen. Well, of course, there was the other thing, the Asians on the entry line up at the bow.
Koreans?
Those two Koreans. He said he talked to a couple of Asian people, but when the police went back and interviewed everybody, the only Asian people that were out there that day didn't remember any incident.
Okay, but nobody, we're saying they interviewed and nobody remembered, or just specifically the two Koreans didn't remember? Because it's possible he mistook their race.
Right?
So did they ask everybody?
Well, the way they went about the whole thing is they didn't necessarily track down, like, everybody from, say, the Jazz, too. They didn't. I think they got a hold of these Koreans. I think they might have interviewed them via email. I don't think it was actually a one-on-one email.
I think that's suspicious. I just think it's not. I think they didn't do their due diligence.
It's entirely possible that they bungled that a little bit. It's also entirely possible that the Asians maybe at the time, this guy is all disturbed, and they're like, "What the hell, dude? We're on vacation. Leave us alone."
Yeah.
And then afterwards, they hear what happened. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, somebody drowned. That's what's her husband. Oh, man, I feel really bad.
Mm.
And so maybe they were just kind of embarrassed to talk about
it. Don't say anything out of guilt.
This guy desperately needed our help, and we blew him off. I feel kind of bad about that.
Yeah.
You know? So maybe, I really don't. Or it could have just been memory, because I don't think these people were contacted for quite some time after the actual drowning.
It does seem like you would remember that. But again, it's so easy. I have friends who are friends with people, and they said, "Oh yeah, his mom's Chinese." And that guy's like, "No, I'm German, like 100% German."
Yeah.
But they think he's, you know, half of some sort of Asian descent. And I mean, identifying race is just impossible.
Well,
it could have been that
these people, they had their masks on, and the masks were just clamped down a little too tight, and it was sort of pulling their face like this to make their eyes kind of
look a little
under pressure.
You know?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So, okay.
Who knows? But,
well, there's the whole bear hug thing.
There's the Dr. Stutz and his testimony about the bear hug.
So can we talk about that for a second? Because that makes absolutely no sense. So I talked to a couple people like you did, people I knew who could dive, and it takes like a dozen revolutions of the knob on a tank to turn it all the way off and then back on.
Yeah,
and
at least a dozen.
Yeah, and it's not an easy thing to do because it is under pressure. So it's not like your faucet, you know, in your garden where you just reach, 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 and it just turns. No, you've got to put some force into it. It would have taken him a good little bit to do that in a bear hug scenario.
Probably would have. Yeah.
So, I mean, it
wouldn't also her sensor have, her computer have shown that?
You would think that
if she had just stopped consuming air for a little while?
You would think it would have shown that, yeah.
I don't know how. Are you getting at, would it have shown that the air going through the regulator was reduced? Is that what you're getting at, Devin?
Yeah, I guess. It would have shown like a decrease, right?
Well, it did show a decrease because she stopped breathing, but I don't know that it would have been able to distinguish that decrease being because the valve was turning. I don't think it would record that kind of content.
No, it wouldn't. I don't think. No, and those things don't record everything. Especially this is 2003. It's hard to remember, but actually, storage was not as easy and, and tiny as it is today. It's amazing what we can get into a tiny little card these days.
Oh, yeah.
2003 was a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely was different.
So are there more suspicious things here?
See, well, we had the bear hug, and there was the fact that she became amazingly negatively buoyant all of a sudden, which, you know, that's actually... There, some people have wondered if Gabe actually deliberately overweighted her.
I have another question about this, because I'm not a diver, and I think a lot of our listeners are not divers. So she put weights in her pockets, in her vest?
Of her vest, yeah.
And were those pockets... basically, the question is could they not have just unzipped the pocket and taken the weight out?
Yeah, well, I was asking Austin about that, and he said that it's when you're actually out there, it's kind of hard to do. When you got your tanks on and everything, it's kind of hard to get to those pockets.
But somebody else couldn't have, Gabe couldn't have done that for her?
Not if she was in a panic.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
have you ever seen anybody get suited up to dive? If they need assistance, they're standing there and you're kind of... arms a bit at your side and you're lumbering around and they are getting to everything and it is then hard to get at it yourself because remember she's in a wetsuit.
Right. No, I know.
So her
I
hands
just
are gonna be covered.
That's why I'm asking. Yeah,
no, that was one of the things I was wondering too, same thing, was how easy is it to grab those weights and chuck them?
Apparently
and just
not.
Lighten yourself up a little bit.
It is easy if she had been wearing a weight belt.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly.
If
she
had
wasn't.
If she had a belt, then because I've known people who've been underwater and was it a sea? He turned around and there was a seal and he wasn't expecting it. It was like inches away from his face. It scared the holy crap out of him. And he just popped a belt and shot towards the surface
because
it just freaked him out.
Uh-huh.
He wouldn't have been able to do that had he tucked them in if he had a vest on at the time.
Yeah.
So
no, I know
again,
that,
depends on equipment.
It depends. It does. And I know Wade Singleton actually dropped his belt that day when he had to get up off the floor with her. He dropped his belt.
Yeah.
So, but that's a different outfit.
Yep.
And I think Gabe did say something about not being able to, you know, it would have been great if he could have. If she had been wearing a belt, he could have dropped
just
the belt, and that
belt.
Would have helped things. But she wasn't able to do that.
Yeah. Right.
And the next step after that is to shuck everything, which is problematical too, because then what you got to do is you got to go straight up to the surface, and that's got us issues.
Yeah. Well, and if he dropped all of her equipment, they would have had to been in the buddy scenario, sharing a breather, the regulator, or if he had figured out where his original regulator was floating around him, then they could have both used them. But he apparently didn't have the wherewithal to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it turns out he didn't find out until later when he was cleaning it that the mouthpiece had actually been knocked off of it.
Oh.
So it wasn't really usable anyway.
Got it.
Yeah, and don't know when exactly that happened. It might have been in the incident when it got knocked off his face and out of his mouth. Another thing that was really kind of suspicious was his claim that he was unable to dive fast enough to catch her.
Which we've talked about, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, from the prosecution's point of view, you know, if you want to drown your wife, you want her to spend some extra quality time in the bottom of the ocean drowning, well, that's what you want to do is let her sink and go and then just, you know, come back later. And I still am not entirely able to make sense of his claim that he couldn't catch her. That does seem awfully strange.
Remember that he is used to swimming in fresh water.
Yeah.
And when you are in salt water, your buoyancy goes up.
Yeah.
So he may have been used to swimming down and expecting to make a certain speed and is not going as fast as he expects. So therefore is judging it and saying, there's no way I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
And again, perception.
Yeah. And there's also another explanation, which I'll talk about in one of my other theories.
Okay.
Another thing that was suspicious is his slow ascent. After he left her, it took him like 3 minutes to get topside. I think almost 3 minutes, although it's hard to say. When, you know, they were using his dive computer, and the dive computer goes in 1 minute increments, and so it could have been like, you know,
barely over two.
It could have been 2 minutes 5 seconds, something like that. Yeah, it does. It does look like from the ascent, it does look like he made a fairly rapid ascent. Again, you'd think in a panic situation like that, he would have just thrown all, you know, caution to the winds and just zipped up to the surface as ASAP.
I guess, yeah. I don't know how recently he had taken the
rescue class,
but...
It wasn't recent.
Okay. Well, I know that, you know, on land first aid thing, the number one thing they drill into you is, like, you have to put yourself first. You have to put yourself first. You have to make sure you do not become a victim as well.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so if he was thinking, okay, I got to do this slow. I can't get the bends. I can't, you know.
Whereas
Wade Singleton, right, is his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was a very experienced diver, was confident in his skill to be able to make that ascent in an emergency situation. Dangerous, sure, but was more confident in his ability and, frankly, probably had done this dive a million times and knew where he was.
Yeah.
Right? Because Gabe probably also was like, I don't know where I am. I don't know where anybody is. I can't get lost in the ocean if I just flail around and go someplace. And again, I don't necessarily want to defend it, but I do want to say that it's totally possible that in his brain he was like, okay, I have to preserve my own life.
Well, and there was
to stay calm.
There was by the way the fact that he did take a small break from his ascent to talk to the Asian divers on the line
at the access line.
So that probably added to his time up.
As far as Wade goes, I don't know exactly Wade actually entered the water. He went out there in the boat with him, but he might have. They went in like a little less than 10 minutes before the whole disaster happened. Wade might have just actually entered the water just a minute before, and then swimming down the boat, you know, and sees her, gets her up. If you've only been underwater for a minute or two, then it's not nearly as serious as if you've been under a longer period of time.
Right.
It's, you know, the longer you're underwater, so maybe that's what
and
happened.
And again, you know, Gabe may have been inexperienced enough to not even be thinking about that, to be thinking like, oh, I've been under for, you know, I need a lot of time to decompress, versus Wade, again, who is experienced and would have known my risk for my own personal injury is very low.
Yeah, and I'm sure when they probably teach you in dive school, they probably like
you err towards caution.
So Wade probably with experience knew that he could really push the envelope a lot.
So any other?
No, that's about it. I've got to say though that there's been some. We talked about the battery malfunction. I don't think that really counts. Dr. Stutz, there was an interesting webpage out there that I mentioned already. This guy actually looked at all the various data from dive computers, et cetera, and found out when Dr. Stutz actually entered the water. Turns out that by the time he entered the water, Gabe was already kind of starting his way up from Tina. So there was actually no way. If the guy saw anybody bear hugging anybody, he might have seen Wade bringing Tina up off the floor of the ocean. Maybe that's what he saw, but he could not actually have seen this bear hug if it was Gabe and Tina. But nonetheless, his testimony was accepted in court, but it looks to me like it's kind of questionable. The slow, the unable to dive fast, well, we'll talk about that. That is kind of inexplicable. But I don't think he murdered her because, and here's why. Number one, he didn't really have a strong motive that I can see.
No.
You know, unless his motive was, well, he wanted to go, like, you know, have his wife die on their honeymoon tragically so he could get a lot of sympathy and maybe write a book about it or maybe a movie deal or something like that. Although
that's a long game.
That's
not good.
That's very, very likely to backfire on you.
Yeah,
it's not. The reason I really don't think he murdered her, besides the lack of motive, is that if he truly had killed her, then it would have made no sense for him to abandon her body underwater the way he did.
No,
because you know he should have brought her up. You got to remember the official theory
that
is
would that make him the hero for at least doing his job
instead
as a dive buddy.
Instead of making him look like, well, basically, it didn't make him look too good that he abandoned her. Not at all. And remember, the official theory of the prosecution is that Gabe shut off her air supply and held her under until she drowned.
Just a quick thing, just for anybody who doesn't know, I've thought about this, and I know somebody's going to ask, well, could he have just kinked the air hose, you know, like you do with the garden hose? But you can't. Those hoses are super dense.
No, they're...
You cannot
They're made
them.
To not do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I wonder why.
Because it's kind of important they don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he could have grabbed the regulator out of her mouth, or you know, the respirator, and just pulled it away from her and just, like, not giving it back, and she would have drowned, maybe. But nonetheless, no matter how you cut it, if he deliberately murdered her by drowning her, then there's no reason not to bring her up.
Yeah, he's already got her.
She's already dead.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not going to, like, squeal or anything like that. And it certainly would have made him look better, a lot better, because abandoning your dive buddy is a huge deal. I mean, Wade Singleton said, remember him, said that he thought that Gabe should have been prosecuted for that alone, just abandoning her, even if he didn't kill her. He should have been prosecuted for that.
So that's theory number one.
So that's why I don't believe that murder is the correct theory here.
I agree.
I don't think that Gabe actually was the honeymoon killer.
Agreed.
Yeah. And so the next theory, of course, is that it was all an accident. Gabe was pretty much telling the truth. You know, so Tina loses it, which is entirely possible. Not the first time it's happened.
She's a total novice.
And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If she had just remained calm, I bet things would have been just fine. Mm-hmm. And
so, you know, one thing about Tina that we haven't talked about is in the paperwork that she had to fill out with the dive company, it said, do you have any heart conditions?
Yeah.
And she said, no, which was a lie. She did.
She did have an arrhythmia that had been corrected with surgery, I think, just a couple of years before.
Yeah. So yeah. That's something that they would not be too comfortable with and would have put her under even more scrutiny. They might not have let her dive.
Yeah, maybe not.
Is the way that I understood it. So the fact that she ignored it makes me think that she may have brought some of it on herself.
Mm. Could be. I mean, the cause of death was officially drowning. There was no evidence of any sort of heart attack or mm-hmm. anything like that. But you never know. I mean, maybe her arrhythmia kicked in again or something
caused
like that.
Caused a panic attack.
I mean, it
would have been more of a panic attack, which if she had a heart condition may have made it even worse in her mind. Oh God, I'm having a heart attack, and she's mm-hmm. freaking out and
starts to panic.
Yeah, and yeah. You know, I mean, the thing is that she's got air, she's got a regulator in her mouth, but if she's freaking out and she starts yelling, that's when all the water gets in, and that's why she would drown.
Or if she hyperventilates and sort of kind of passes out, whoops, you know, that'll do it. Yeah. So, again, if she had just been a little calmer about things, it probably would have been good. I think Gabe...
And that's not a judge. I know the way you said that is not a judgment on any way on Tina.
Oh, no.
Just so anybody listening to it, sometimes the way we say these things get misperceived. So
yeah, it's a very scary alien environment.
It's super scary. Yeah. I was just remembering that, you know, I've never been scuba diving or even snorkeling, really, because I don't like water in my face.
But it's fine.
I don't.
That's why she never showers.
True. But I remember watching the videos for the Ben McDaniels thing and even just watching the YouTube videos and, you know, it was a little unsettling.
Too much.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was still, that was too much.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like the whole underwater thing, but that's just me, you know? I mean, but even I, I've done the snorkeling and I've done other fun stuff in the water, but, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not sure what would happen if I was down there 50 feet and maybe I would lose it too. Yeah. I don't know.
But similarly, you don't know what you would do if your dive partner were doing that thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, or what I would do if my dive partner put me in a bear hug and shut off my air. Oh, what am I saying? Yeah.
So we pretty much agree it was not just an accident the way that Gabe...
Well, it could have been an accident. I mean, so Gabe...
But not the way that Gabe represented it?
I actually think that it may very well have been exactly the way he represented it. It is just that they were both so inept...
Yeah.
At handling the situation...
Yeah.
...that... They literally, their combined actions was her cause of death.
I think because they didn't need to fight the current to try to get back to the access point. They could have just gone straight up.
How long is it? What's the distance from access point, Joe? It's
about 100, 110 meters.
So it's not a huge, especially when you're already in a moving current.
Yeah, they could have actually, it might have been faster to just swim downstream instead of trying to swim back up.
And easier.
Yeah. Or the alternative is just go straight up.
Yeah,
go straight
ascend.
Up. But and so that might have compounded the situation by trying to go back there again.
And just to pause here for a second to talk about the fact that everyone's like, oh, Gabe was super domineering and blah, blah, blah. It sounds like he just was like, yeah, okay, Tina, we're going to do what you want to do. You know, in a situation where you're kind of a jerk... Who's super domineering, aren't you going to be, no, if this is the right way?
That's right.
You're
no,
not
going to
say, okay, yep.
I am your man. We will do as I say.
You know, you're not going to say, I mean, it sounds like kind of what he was thinking was, all right, what she wants to do is going to be the best way to calm her. We're going to do what she wants to do. Let's go do this.
Even though
he may or may not have known it was the wrong call.
Yeah.
It sounds like he
might
have
also considered that to be the right call.
You got to remember, too, that at this point, I mean, he might not have even been aware that this is a total life and death situation.
Probably he wasn't.
He might have just thought, well, she's wigging out a little bit. We're going to get her back to the line. Mm-hmm. Once she gets her hand on the line, she'll calm down and she'll mm-hmm. relax, you know? And he's probably, at least initially, it's possible that he thought, hey, she'll be fine. We'll just get her back to the line mm-hmm. and she'll settle down.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't work out that way.
No. But,
so I would not say that this is totally beyond the realm of possibility, but there's one more theory.
I like this theory the best.
You like this theory? which is that Gabe did not murder her. It was an accident, but he's also not quite telling the truth about the whole thing.
Hmm.
All right. So yeah. show me what you got here.
Yeah, his statements to the police, which I read. I read his entire, well, not everything. I read his entire October 23rd statement. There's a transcript out there. I sent you guys a link to that. Did you guys read that?
Some.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot there, and it's hard to read, you know, and not because I'm semi-literate or anything like that, but just because of the way it's been transcribed and the way he speaks doesn't really translate to the written page very well. I'm told that the video of it is actually much, much better for understanding what he's saying.
Okay.
And there are transcription errors as well, which doesn't help. But his statements to the police indicate that he thought that Tina was experiencing a lot of stress and anxiety and maybe even panic, but what if it wasn't her that lost it? What if it was Gabe who lost it? And so what if Tina didn't actually knock his mask and respirator off of his face? What if he panicked and knocked hers off of her face and she drowned? What if that happened?
Oh, like he clocked her in the head and she was semi-conscious and therefore drowned because of that?
And it might be that, and I'm not, no casting aspersions on anybody. Anybody can, again, lose it and just panic a little bit and cause something like this accidentally. And maybe not want to fess up to it.
So you're saying something to the effect of he freaks out, he accidentally swings and clobbers her in the head, and that's what then starts the whole drowning?
Clobbers her in the head, knocks her mask and respirator off of her face.
But maybe. her mask was in place, wasn't it?
Yeah, you could have gotten it back into place. I mean, okay. But her mask and respirator were in place, yes. But even leaving that aside, he might have panicked also.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
I guess one question would be then on this theory is why was it that her oxygen consumption was so much higher, and it sounds like his was fairly normal.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, a higher than what an experienced diver would use.
Right, but not. I mean, it sounds like hers was really high.
Kind of, yeah, it was. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, I mean, that feeds into the theory that she was the one freaking out and hyperventilating, not him. Mm-hmm. But
she's breathing shallow and fast. He's breathing deep and hard.
Yeah, but
instead of calm and even.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you look at it this way, if you think of that Gabe actually had a panic attack, then even if he didn't knock the mask off her face, if he was the one who was really panicking.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they both were panicking. One of the anxieties that he said that he had was, well, the current was super strong.
Yeah.
Which I think is, what's the big deal? They're on drift dive where they just have to drift down the length of the boat.
Yeah.
And he also was talking about, to the police again, said, well, they lost sight of the entry rope on the bow, and he knew that there was an exit line on the stern of the ship, but that was, as far as he was concerned, that was 100 miles away.
Meters.
That was... Well, but as far
oh,
as...
Oh, miles. Got
yeah.
it.
But
Sorry.
Yeah, it was 100 meters away maybe, but obviously it wasn't visible. It wouldn't be visible for a while. He expressed some anxiety about not being able to see it and maybe missing it.
Got it.
And being swept out to sea. So I don't think this is a rational concern, personally. I mean, it is in a sense, but at the same time, it'd actually be very easy to find that thing. All you got to do is stay over the ship.
Mm-hmm.
On that day... The current was not parallel to the ship. It was actually about 10 degrees off, according to what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stayed at the same point, you entered right on the bow, stayed in that same exact point without moving a muscle, you would be blown off course enough that you probably would miss that line. Because by my back-of-the-envelope calculation, they would have missed it by about 17 meters.
Okay.
Which is just beyond the realm. Maybe they would have seen it, maybe not. But of course, at the same time, you know what to do. There's a huge ship underneath you. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is kick your fins a little bit and get back over the ship, the center line of the ship, and boom, you're lined up for your exit line.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like an irrational, and again, there's no way underwater, there's no way that Tina somehow communicated this through body language or sign language. She didn't communicate that to Gabe. That was an anxiety that was all his own.
Yeah.
Entirely his own. Also, by the way, there is mention also that the people at the dive company actually talked about what to do and how to signal them if
well,
you went beyond the exit buoy.
In fairness, though, the people at the dive company were supposed to have done a test dive with Tina and didn't.
Well, in fairness, yeah. I mean,
you
I
know, so maybe they said... They told them and
in fairness to the dive company, you can tell somebody what to do, but that for them to pay attention and register and retain that is a whole nother matter.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Another thing that makes me think that maybe Gabe was in a state of panic is the whole part, and this is the part that truly doesn't make sense, is where he's trying to chase Tina downward as she's sinking, and he couldn't catch her, which makes utterly no sense to me, or the experts I talked to. And again, there was a whole question of, well, was his BCD way overinflated? And, well, if that was the case, if that was inhibiting his downward progress, then all he had to do was deflate it. He didn't apparently think to do it, which is evidence to me that he wasn't thinking very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah,
is evidence
I would agree
to me
with
that he
yes.
was panicking.
Yes.
I don't know. And at that point, he turned around and just left. Again, evidence that he's scared because maybe he already figured out that Tina was already dead and figured there's no sense losing my own life trying to rescue her.
Much kind of along the same lines as what Devin was saying, being a rescuer, yeah.
Although at the same time, I'm asking myself, well, is that really rational?
Because you have a whole tank of air.
You got a tank of air, and if you swim down a little farther, grab her, haul her up, mm-hmm. you know, really, what's the risk there?
But
not
let's
much.
Also add to that, right, the fact that he had already had that misfire with his computer.
Uh-huh.
Or his dive.
His dive computer,
dive
yeah.
computer, right? So he may have already been a little in a weird mindset of like, well, maybe this computer isn't 100% accurate right now, right? Because I was having issues with it before. So maybe he's thinking, all right, I know I definitely have enough to get on this, you know, short little scuba trip, but maybe he's thinking, you know, he's already not thinking particularly clearly. He's probably panicking and thinking, oh my God, also, what if my computer is telling me that I have a lot more air than I actually have? What if, you know, something malfunctions, blah, blah, blah. He's already panicking. And then he's trying to get down. And then he's like, oh, I've obviously used way more air than I should have. And oh my gosh, my computer, you know, just a huge panic of
all
of that stuff.
All the possible
I agree
stuff
that,
could go
that
wrong.
Rationally above ground with no one, no emotional trauma of watching
above
your wife
water?
Die. Yeah. I'm sorry. On ground above water, to us sitting in a dry room without having just watched our wife die.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, of course, he had air to get down there and blah, blah, blah. But if he's panicking, he's having a panic attack.
I think
he's
he was.
He's not having, not in his right mind.
Yeah.
It
makes sense to just beat feet out of there. And, you know, and that's because, you know, again, like you said, to us, it looks simplicity itself. You just swim down there, grab her, haul her to the surface, alive or dead, at least you got her. And he just turned and left, and I think that that's the sign. Again, and again, from where he went, he could have gone straight up. Instead, he goes back to the bow against the current, taking more time. Every decision was kind of the wrong one.
It was bad.
A lot of them were not rational. I think he was just panicking.
Yeah.
And I think he lost it. And I think that's why his story doesn't quite make sense, is because he's never wanted to fess up entirely to the fact that he just lost it.
Well, here's a question. If he had had a panic attack, did he lose his scuba license?
Not that I know of, no.
So if he had admitted that he was incompetent, caused the death of someone, and, you know, basically just...
Well,
I ruined everything, would he have lost it? Probably, right?
Maybe, but you know, I'm not sure at that point, how enthusiastic he was about scuba anymore anyway.
Right.
But he might not have ever gone scuba diving after that.
And I got to tell you, the whole thing of him saying, I want to scuba dive and I want to go on boats and you need to learn to do it with me as well if you want to be with me. I mean, it's weird to me because he'd been diving for, at this point, 10 years.
7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
And he had only in 7 years logged 50 dives, and they were all like pool dives and little quarry dives.
Most of them were mostly shallow. Yeah.
Not as if he was an avid diver and this was going to always be his thing, which is why I agree with Joe that it's so easy to see him freak out.
He was
scenario.
An novice.
I agree with that.
Novice.
I was just going to say, to me, it's not that weird that he didn't go on. I mean, we don't know their financial situation. He probably couldn't afford. He lived in Alabama, right? It's not like there are a lot of really great dive spots in Alabama, right? As far as I know.
I don't know.
I'm sure that we'll find out.
I'm sure we will.
Alabama is actually close to the Gulf of Mexico, so there's good diving down there, I hear.
Close, but you know,
depending on where in the state you are,
his financial situation,
true.
Right? So it may have been that he thought, all right, well, we're gonna go someplace tropical for our honeymoon. I've always, you know, I've been scubaing for 10 years. This is my chance to really get a great nice dive in.
Oh, sure.
And obviously I want you to do that with me because you're my wife and I love you. So
yeah, I guess at 26, they were 26 years old, both of them. So yeah, financially, it's not as if they would be super well off. Okay,
no, not really.
I'll retract a little bit of my scorn.
I mean, you can
be
at 50 and not be financially well off enough. I mean,
there's
no stage of life where you can definitively say that person is definitely going to be able to afford to go scuba diving.
Well, I'm not exactly hurting for cash, but I got to tell you, it's just a matter of priorities. I mean, I could actually, if I actually had to, I could afford to travel halfway around the world and go scuba diving.
Right.
I'm not going to.
But you're also not 26.
Well, there's that too. But I just, you know, no matter what the age, there's always something better to spend the money on.
Right, like buying a house and starting a family.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, but there could have been other repercussions too. I mean, he might have felt at least partially responsible if he felt like he had done something to contribute to her death.
Well, I think he did. I mean, that body viewing comments, that seems like
Well, obviously, you know, he did in one way or another, but from a legal point of view, it's one thing to sort of say, hey, wouldn't it be great to learn how to scuba dive? Because that sort of, you know, contributed to her death, but that's not something you can throw somebody in jail for. But there are other things that you could conceivably say, well, that's manslaughter, dude. You screwed up. You screwed up and you did this and this that contributed to her dying, and so you're going to go to jail. So
like
you
freaking out underwater.
Like freaking
and
out and stuff. And you can see where he might finesse his story a little bit to make himself look a little better, not only from a standpoint of self-esteem, but also from a legal standpoint.
Yeah.
I don't want to get arrested or whatever, so... that's kind of my theory there, is that it was an accident, an unfortunate thing, but his behavior probably wasn't entirely the best. And I'm not saying I would have been any better in that situation myself, but that's what I think most likely happened.
I agree.
Yeah, most likely. All right, so that's that story. Next week, Finding Nemo.
Solve the mystery.
Yeah. All right, let me do a little housekeeping before we go here. You're a scuba diver. And by the way, I just want to say, I don't know if I said it before, this dive does not look that daunting to me. You know, it looks actually fairly easy.
Mm-hmm. Looks fun.
You know, it does look like a lot of fun. But I want to say, if you're one of these scuba diving types and you want to take issue with that, if you'd like to issue a challenge to me to go to Australia and do the dive, well, I will accept that challenge.
Your dollar.
Absolutely. You throw down that gauntlet and your wallet, and I will go to Australia and dive that wreck.
I knew that was coming.
Absolutely. And let me give you the way you want to get a hold of me through our email, which is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. What else have we got? We got a website. You know what those things are, right? thinkingsidewayspodcast.com, where you can find our episodes. We have an episode list out there. You can download and listen to our stuff on the website. We also have merch. You can buy T-shirts and mugs and all kinds of fun stuff. You can also find us on iTunes, where you can subscribe. You can rate us. You can review us. A good review, please. We like those a lot better. There's streaming services. What do we got? Like Stitcher and God knows what else. There's
Google
everything.
Play. All Google the apps. Play.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah, there's billions of them. And we're on social media, including Facebook. I don't know if you've heard of those guys or not. Apparently they're big. But we have a group and a page, so like the page, join the group. And there's lots of fun stuff going on, lots of back and forth and commentary and stuff. It's a friendly group. I think, you know, there's no flame wars. I think everybody's really nice.
Yeah.
And
it's a very chill group.
It is. It's a great, great group. And I like our listeners. They're great people. And we're on Twitter. Thinking Sideways, leave that G out, and there we are. And we have a subreddit, Thinking Sideways. That's on Reddit. If you haven't heard of those guys, well, do a Google. That's REDDIT. We have a subreddit, and so go check it out. And that's about it. Until next week, any final thoughts, you guys?
No.
I was going to make a swimming joke, but no, I got nothing.
Yeah, I can't think of anything either. So, all right, ta-ta, till next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.